Jazz have a big one this weekend. There's a lot of focus nationally on, obviously, the March Madness and the Elite Eight stuff. But the Jazz head down to Southern California tomorrow for another one of those playoff-type games with the L.A. Clippers. The last time they played the Clippers up here, it was a playoff atmosphere, and the Jazz found a way to get a win. They're in that battle for the 4-5 spot. Thought we would talk about a little bit about the Jazz, a little bit about the NBA with Michael Lee. He's a senior NBA writer with The Vertical at Yahoo Sports. Find him on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Great. Big picture, 10,000-foot view. You're not in this market, and you cover everything in the NBA. But the Jazz are in the 4 spot right now. They missed the playoffs. Should have been in it a year ago, but kind of faltered down the stretch. What have you made of what Quinn Snyder and the guys have done this year so far?
I think a lot of what the success kind of hinges on what happened in the offseason. They always had a nice young core. They always had great players that they showed tremendous faith and commitment to. I think a lot of young organizations, they get panicked when their guys don't immediately, win. But they had patience, and then they added George Hill, Boris Diaw, and Joe Johnson. And I think those moves solidified a really solid, nice young roster, helped these younger guys who are learning how to win on a bigger stage. And adding that kind of success to guys who are accustomed to winning, I think that sort of rose the bar and expectations for what the Jazz should be. And I think they're living up to what everyone expected.
It'll be tough for Quinn Snyder to win Coach of the Year, but he'll be in the conversation. What about a guy like Dennis Lindsay? Will he be in the conversation for front office of the year?
Yeah, because like I said, the moves that he made this summer were huge. I mean, and it's not just a 1-year gig. I think that the executive of the year, you got to take consideration the whole body. And I think that what he's done, the patience that he showed with those guys. Like I said, I can use examples of teams like Orlando or Phoenix, where it's like you think they're building towards something, and then they just constantly hit the reset. But with these guys, they took their time, they allowed them to grow up and figure out some things, and now they're reaping the benefits of that patience. So I think he definitely has to be in the running, because you can look at the moves that he made this summer. Clearly, you see how much that's affected the team. But then you just look at what they've been doing over time in terms of building this thing. And I think he definitely needs to be in the running.
The two biggest moves were obviously the acquisition of Joe Johnson, who's hit some big shots late coming off the bench. He's been a scorer, and especially with the injuries to Rodney Hood, he's been able to fill in nicely there. But the biggest was clearly adding George Hill in that deal. For whatever reason, Indiana wanted to move on from him. When George Hill has played, the Jazz have been at their best, certainly this year, Michael. He's been terrific. But now the Jazz are in that position with the salary cap and things this summer, and George Hill hitting the free agent market, a guy that's making $8 million a year and is quite a bargain. He is going to be well up in the 20s, maybe near $30 million this summer.
Yeah, I mean, it's, for me, to be honest with you, I've got so accustomed to guys being plugged in a certain salary, groups. And so the new economy really throws me off in terms of how much guys are worth. I don't know how to gauge a player's value. I know if I'm an agent, I know I'm asking for all I can get, but I don't know who's actually going to be willing to or able to pay it. I mean, obviously with George Hill, he's going to expect to get a lot of money on the open market. There are going to be teams that are going to be willing to pay him. But to be honest with you, in terms of like gauging what guys are going to make, it's really hard for me to find a number that seems fair, because every number just looks like it just blows my eyes the fuck out, So I think that the key is not just George Hill, it's making sure you keep Gordon. And if George, you got to keep George to keep Gordon, that's one thing. So I think that the main guy has got to be Gordon Hayward.
Well, it's obviously got to be Gordon Hayward. And I think Gordon's happy. He's the face of the franchise. He's a star player here. The other thing with both Hayward and Hill that you've got to look around and take a look at is, can other people pay you more money? Well, nobody's going to be able to pay Gordon more money than the Jazz will. Others might be able to pay as much or close to what the Jazz will with Gordon, with George Hill. But with that being said, are you going to still be in a winning situation? There's teams with cap room and money, but if you're George Hill and you're 30 years old, do you want to go make difference between $100 million and $120 million, but playing the last 4 years of your career on a really bad team?
Yeah, but if you're used to winning, you've been winning your whole career.
Exactly.
I feel like you can take a risk on yourself and that you're going, whatever, you get the most money, and then you wind up worrying about winning later because he's been winning everywhere he's been.
Mr. Michael Lee with us here on the Bill Riley Show on ESPN 700. So as you kind of survey the landscape of the West, I kind of look at it and I say, okay, yeah, Oklahoma City's played better as of late. They've got a shot, and the Grizzlies have been good too. But I kind of feel like we're on a crash course for the matchup we're going to see tomorrow down in L.A. in the first round of the playoffs. Do you kind of foresee, as you play the tape forward, a Clippers-Jazz first-round matchup?
If I'm the Jazz, that's the series I want. Because I look at Oklahoma City, which is right there on the Clippers' tail, and I don't want any part of Russell Westbrook for seven games. I just feel like the way that team is structured, that could be a handful. The Clippers just look like they're a mess. They look like they're just going on fumes, and you can tell that, you know Chris Paul is a free agent, Blake's a free agent, J.J. Redick will be a free agent. They look like a team that's already kind of headed towards that eventual breakup. And that would be the team I want, as opposed to other Oklahoma City. And I see a team that's playing a lot better. They made a huge trade at the deadline, picking up Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott. And I think that's a team that would scare me if they're a first round opponent. But if it's the Clippers, the knives are getting sharper. I'm getting ready for that one.
Yeah, the Jazz hadn't had great success against the Clippers as of late till that last game. But, Michael, that game a couple of weeks ago here in Salt Lake City had the little bit of a feel of a playoff game. And the Jazz, who have been kind of the nice guy doormats, not quite a playoff team the last 4 or 5 years, they're developing a little bit of an edge to them, and it's kind of led by Rudy Gobert. And Gobert's got a little nasty in him. He's not afraid to play a little bit of the role of the enforcer. And I'll tell you what, he's growing up right before our eyes. That game against the Knicks the other night was a career night for him. And if they get that kind of performance out of Rudy Gobert, they're going to be tough to beat in a first-round playoff spot.
Absolutely. I mean, you just mentioned that game against the Knicks. I mean, he really dropped 35 points. I mean, it just says a lot about him that he's not just a defensive guy. I mean, he can do other things on the floor. He's a blow down there. He's got that length. So he can really make a difference. But if he can give you 30 – in one game in the playoffs, then that should be a game you wind up winning, because that would mean that everybody else is probably either attracted so much attention that he's getting open looks, or everybody's just flowing together. So that's the beauty of getting a lot of big offensive night out of Rudy. It means that everything's working out in your favor. But he changes things so much on the defensive end. He spooks guys out. Guys don't want to go in there because they know that those long arms are going to be there to send a shot in the opposite direction. And that's a good thing to have on your side. You know, having that intimidation factor, it does play a role.
Michael, how long have you been covering the NBA now?
15 years now. 15 years actually this month.
So I'd be curious to know, and one of your former colleagues and a guy that I know you know well, Mark Spears, wrote a really interesting piece on his site, talking about Salt Lake City and the perception of Salt Lake City for black basketball players, black players in the NBA. How much have you seen Salt Lake's perception or the market change in your 15 years around the league?
I can honestly say that Salt Lake City, for me, when I first, went on my first road trip out to Salt Lake, I didn't know what to expect. And I just remembered, all the comments that Dennis Rodman made during the playoffs about, Mormons and everything else, and that he took all the heat. So I didn't know what to expect. But I was pleasantly surprised, one, by the people. I actually look forward to going to Utah from that point on because I found some nice restaurants.
Yeah.
I think the perception from the outside, I think a lot of times you just got to go someplace, actually see it for what it is, see how beautiful it is, and then you can go from there. And I think that's really what it comes down to. A lot of times people make their perception based on what they think it is, but when you actually see it, there's a lot to offer. And I also understand how, like, guys like Darren Williams, who went there, fell in love with the place, like Salt Lake City. So I think that it just depends on, sometimes you just got to experience it before you can judge.
Before I let you go, is there a scenario that you could foresee where we don't have a Golden State and Cleveland final in June?
Yes, if Kevin Durant doesn't come back 100%, And if the Cavaliers continue to play defense the way they've been playing the last month, and you will hope that that's not that's a sign of boredom and just an urgency to just get the playoffs started already. But if this is how they're going to approach defense, then they could find some trouble, because there are a lot of teams right now who don't have that fear of the Cavaliers that they had in the past. I think that teams like Boston, Washington, and Toronto can look at Cleveland as a team they can beat, not a team that they just have to roll over for.
All right. The follow-up to that then, Michael, is if you had to bet your rather sizable Yahoo vertical paycheck on one of those teams not making it, if you had to pick one of them not to be in the finals right now, who would you bet on not being in the finals?
I got to put my whole check on it?
Yeah, just one of them. Not the whole year. You're just going to miss one. You're going to miss your rent check 1 month.
How about $20?
Okay, fair enough.
I won't put any wagers on it, but I would probably put it on Golden State. And the only reason is because it's just really hard to win three straight Western Conference. I mean, you think how tough the West has been over the years, and the Lakers did it, but I just think in terms of winning three in a row, that's a serious grind. That's a lot to expect, and the West keeps getting better. San Antonio looks like a team could give them a lot of trouble if they meet in the conference finals. So I think if San Antonio is there on the other side, they have a chance of really making it hard for them to get back to 3 years in a row. So that would be the one team I probably think has the best chance of not making it, and that also has a lot to do with the fact that we haven't seen Kevin Durant back on the floor, so we don't know what he's going to look like.
All right, the follow-up to the follow-up to the follow-up. It does not involve your paycheck, though, this time. Houston or San Antonio, if you were betting, which team would you bet would have the better chance to knock Golden State off?
San Antonio, yeah, like I was just saying.
Okay.
Houston would give them trouble, too, though, just because the way James Harden's playing. I don't think that people really appreciate how good he's been ever since he's been in Houston. And then you look at the way that they've built a team around him that works, and they also have, breakout seasons coming from guys like Eric Gordon. I think that matchup is tough just because they stretch you out. You got shooters all over the floor, and James just really an amazing player that I think, if he misses out on an MVP again, we'll look back on this stretch and be like, how in the world did this guy not win one? Because two of the last 3 years, he's definitely been right there as an MVP.
You find him at The Vertical on Yahoo.com, and you'll find him on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee. That's Michael Lee, senior NBA writer. Hey, thanks for making a few minutes here on a Friday for us. Hopefully we get you back out here to Salt Lake City come playoff time. Thanks, Michael.
I'd love to. So thanks for having me on.
There you go. Michael Lee with us here on The Bill Riley Show.